Słowa innowacje czy innowacyjność są odmieniane na wiele różnych sposobów i w zasadzie nie znam ludzi, którzy nie podpisaliby się pod stwierdzeniem, że gospodarka powinna być innowacyjna albo że inwestowanie w innowacje jest czymś złym. Problem tkwi jednak w tym, że często za deklaracjami niewiele stoi. Z ekipą Nauka to Lubię już jakiś czas temu postanowiłem się wybrać do najbardziej innowacyjnego, zdaniem europejskiego rankingu innowacyjności, kraju naszego kontynentu, do Danii. Po to, żeby sprawdzić, próbować zrozumieć, skąd ta innowacyjność się bierze. A pierwszym naszym przystankiem jest wyspa Fionia i miasto Odense. A zaraz pod miastem hub technologiczny, hub robotyczny i firma Universal Robots. Teraz idę na spotkanie z Sorenem, product managerem w firmie Universal Robots. Hi.
Hi. Welcome. This is our showroom here at Universal Robots, where we display a variety of applications of where our cobots are situated in. So when you see these long manufacturing lines where people stand and do the same thing over and over again, a robot is much better suited for that because we believe that we are created to do more than just the same tedious tasks over and over again. We are created to work with our hands, to use our creativity. We believe that our part in the world is to help people, you know, get rid of these tedious and sometimes dangerous tasks that the robot can do. What's special about our robot is that the user interface is extremely easy to use. In the past, you kind of needed a formal robot education to program the robot. What we did was we tried to rethink it and say, well, the human operator on the floor should actually be able to program, load, play, pause the programs, and actually use the robot as any other tool in the toolbox, like a hammer or a power drill.
Dzisiaj Dania jest liderem innowacji, ale jeszcze nie tak dawno temu była w sumie na końcu rankingu. Jeszcze na przełomie lat 70. i 80. jej gospodarka opierała się głównie na rolnictwie, na przykład eksporcie produktów mleczarskich i tradycyjnym przemyśle. Pierwsze refleksje, że model ten nie jest dla takiego kraju jak Dania optymalny, przyszły podczas kryzysu naftowego w 1973 roku. To wtedy Dania weszła na ścieżkę rozwoju technologii odnawialnych w energetyce. To stworzyło podstawy dla sektora zielonych technologii, ale także dla wielu innych sektorów wysokich technologii. Drugim krokiem milowym były wprowadzone w latach 90. reformy gospodarcze, w tym tak zwane flex security, ale także zwiększenie wydatków na badania i rozwój, które umożliwiły rozwój sektorów takich jak biotechnologia i IT. May I say that it's a kind of Denmark robotic hub, this island?
Yes, you can say that. Of course, this area that we are in, and especially around the city of Odense, is known as the world's leading robotic city. And why is that?
My next question, yeah.
Yeah, why is that?
Why is that?
Okay. Yeah, of course, we have like some front runners in robotics, some large global companies that are located here. But actually, from this spot, half an hour by bike, you can reach 160 robotic companies. The reason why we have a cluster in Denmark is that the state of Denmark has actually pointed out what we're really good at. And in Denmark, we're really good at robotics. And then we need a national cluster for providing that and also to foster the world with Danish technology. At the moment, we have 65% of all the robotic companies, they're doing exports out of Denmark. So the industry is already born global. And what we see is that Danish technology is actually quite successful when it comes to international trade and is being used all over the world also. And that's supported and funded also by the state of Denmark and the national government.
So what is the craziest application you heard for this kind of robots?
Maybe one of my favorites is actually people using our robots as barista robots. So you mentioned the kitchen before. If you're ever in San Francisco, down by the harbor, you can go in and you can order a coffee made by one of our robots, where it will pour the milk, make the latte art, and I think it's very cool because it brings them closer and closer to ordinary people and tasks in our everyday life.
Pierwszy dzień zdjęciowy za nami, firma Universal Robots, i powiem wam, co mnie ujęło. Ich hasło, ich motto. Chcemy stworzyć świat, w którym roboty będą pracowały z ludźmi, a nie ludzie jak roboty. Zdjęcia skończone i jedziemy dalej, oczywiście kamperem. No i ten model FlexSecurity, który łączy elastyczny rynek pracy z wysokimi świadczeniami socjalnymi, a to sprzyja innowacyjności. Mówiąc o elastyczności rynku pracy, mam na myśli zarówno zwalnianie, jak i zatrudnianie, ale połączone z silnym systemem zabezpieczeń socjalnych. To rozwiązanie, zdaniem Duńczyków, z którymi rozmawiałem, sprzyja podejmowaniu ryzyka zarówno przez przedsiębiorców, jak i pracowników. Wsparcie mobilności zawodowej, wsparcie przekwalifikowywania, to wszystko ułatwia firmom technologicznym szybkie dostosowanie zespołów do nowych projektów. A jeszcze w połowie lat 90., gdy to rozwiązanie wprowadzono, stopa bezrobocia w Danii była kilkukrotnie wyższa niż jest teraz. Wczoraj były roboty, w sumie synonim nowoczesności i innowacyjności. A dzisiaj pojechaliśmy ponad 200 km na północ. No i właśnie jesteśmy na wyspie Mors, a to jest największy w Danii fiord. Fiord kojarzy się rzeczywiście z czymś takim bardzo głębokim, skalistym. Tutaj fiordy są raczej płytkie. Średnia głębokość duńskich fiordów wynosi tylko trochę ponad 4 metry. Tu jest siedziba projektu BioReefs, projektu, który powstał na połączeniu czy ze współpracy biznesu, NGO-sów, no i świata nauki. A ja mam za chwilę zamiar wejść do, pierwszy raz w życiu, do wylęgarni skorupionów. So, where are we? What is this place?
This place is the hatchery of DTU Aquan, the Technical University of Denmark. And it's the unique hatchery of no-trophic species. There is no other one in Denmark.
What you are doing here? What is your job here?
Our job here is to create a new method, innovate and find ways to produce seeds. So small bivalve or small macroalgae that after we can either use for aquaculture to give to producers or to use for restoration.
Okay. Could you explain me step by step what is here?
In this project, we want to find methods, develop new technology in order to do restoration and then after transfer our knowledge so that more restoration project on biogenic reef can take place. So we developed techniques and methods that after other hatchery will be able to use so that you can produce more to restore biogenic reef.
What kind of species you want to restore?
We have these two species, oyster and horse mussel. They are protected species. They are endangered. So they are part of the OSPAR list. So they are species that used to flourish and be present in Denmark. And they have been very reduced for different reasons.
And those are?
Those ones are horse mussels. So you can see they are very similar to a blue mussel, the one that we know, but they have a bit of a different shape. They are bigger. You have male and female, and the idea is to make them reproduce. So if they are very orangey, that's the female, and if they are more beige color, white color, that's the male.
Okay.
We'll collect the eggs and sperm, fertilize, produce larvae, rear the larvae, and then do some testing of what is the best culch, what is the best substrate that we can use to after reintroduce them in the environment. So this is absolutely not for food production, this is pure habitat restoration.
What is innovative in BioReef project?
It is to put out, first of all, horse mussels. Nobody tried to, or they did try, but succeeded in producing larvae and produce horse mussels that you can actually put into nature and make a reef from a biogenic reef. But that's quite innovative and new. And then very few can scale up oyster production to also make reefs.
In the BioReef project, what is very different from other hatchery is that in this place, we have decided to have a program for testing, disease testing. So we want to produce disease-free oyster. So each oyster has a quarantine time of almost 2 years. And we make sure that they are tested several times and that after they can go for production and be used as broodstock. And then we have worked with geneticists so that all the sampled oysters are also used for tracing the genetic diversity. When you do restoration, you want to have as much diversity as you can from the genetic point of view. So we make sure that in hatchery, if you have only few breeders, you can reduce the diversity. So we mix the different breeders and trace what's the diversity so that we ensure that you will have a good traceable reef. And then you can also follow if they start reproducing and go recruit in some other areas where they came from, so you can trace back their origin. So it's a traceability and genetic diversity we work on, which is very important for restoration. So the particularity of the European flat oyster is that it's an animal that requires the male and the female to be together. So you cannot do like other species, like we saw with the mussels, you see the male and the female very clearly, so you can separate them and then force fertilization. Those ones, they change sex during the reproduction time and in the season. So you need to have them together because the male fertilizes the female. And then the female keeps the new larvae inside the shell.
Like here, yeah?
Yes, exactly. So they kept them, the female keep them for 8 to 10 days. And then when she released the larvae, they are already big, around 180, 200 microns. And then we will have them in, we collect them in larvae tanks. We put them in a larvae area until they reach this 300 micron, 350 micron size. They have a foot, they have an eye spot, and they are ready to settle and cement on substrate. So for restoration, we use different substrates that will allow us to keep the oyster as a reef or together so that they are not washed away by the currents or that they are not maybe protected from predators. So that you can also follow and see how the reef will evolve and grow.
How long it takes?
To be this size?
Yeah.
I would say 2 years, 3, 4, 5, and then 6, 7, 10
more. 10 years, okay. A long time.
Yes.
Dania jest najbardziej innowacyjnym krajem Unii Europejskiej według europejskiego rankingu innowacyjności za rok 2024, wyprzedzając Szwecję, która zajmowała pierwsze miejsce w latach od 2017 do 2022. Według rankingu Global Innovation Index Dania plasuje się na 9. miejscu na świecie z wysoką koncentracją badaczy, około 16 tysięcy osób na milion mieszkańców. I to jest najwyższy wskaźnik w Unii Europejskiej oraz wysokimi wydatkami czy wysokimi inwestycjami w badania i rozwój wynoszącymi ponad 3% PKB, przewyższając średnią unijną, która wynosi 2,3% i Polskę, która, w której badania i rozwój czy nakłady na badania i rozwój wynoszą mniej niż 1,5 niż 1,5% PKB. Ale co ciekawe, jeszcze 30 lat temu Dania na badania i rozwój procentowo wydawała tyle, ile Polska teraz. Ten wzrost nastąpił dopiero w latach 90. i 2000. Udało się to osiągnąć, czy raczej udaje się to osiągać dzięki ulgom podatkowym dla firm inwestujących w badania, ale także dzięki wspieraniu partnerstw publiczno-prywatnych. Dania rozwinęła wysokie technologie, w tym przemysł farmaceutyczny. Ten napędzany przez takie firmy jak chociażby Novo Nordisk odpowiada za ponad 50% wzrostu gospodarczego Danii w ostatnich latach. Which one of those projects you find as the most innovative?
I think the innovative part here is the 3D printed reefs. It's a project we have in our offshore wind farm in Denmark, in Anholt. It's located in Kattegat, but that's where we have deployed the 12 structures that we call 3D printed reefs. It's basically a meter high structures that looks like a little like a mountain with hollows into it. It weighs around 500 kilos. But where we want to give a chance for a target species, the cotia, that has seen a significant decline in Kattegat during the last 20-25 years, trying to help that population in that area.
This is the larvae tank. You see, we feed them with the microalgae. So all of the oyster, the broodstock and the larvae, they get different type of microalgae and food. And here, if you look closely, you see some dots at the surface.
Yes.
That's the larvae.
Why is it important to produce larvae? of different marine life?
For us, it's really important because we want to restore biogenic reef in the Danish Sea.
This project would not be possible without the collaboration between universities, you mentioned, business, companies, and NGOs.
No, that's
right. You are from NGOs. Why is it important to have NGOs in this collaboration?
We are like representing the restoration part. We are the voice for restoring nature. We are a very science-based organization, so we want to work with the university to make sure that what we do actually works and fits within these ecosystems. But we also work together with companies who also like to contribute to nature restoration.
Yeah. So for instance, in this place, you see some small oysters. Those ones, they are from June, July last year.
You said at the very beginning that there are three parties, science, yeah, industry, yeah, business, and NGO.
Yes.
Why you need those two? Why you can't do this project as a scientist?
We all benefit from each other, find the best location to do the restoration, and then we all bring our knowledge from the environment we will go and restore. And us, we bring all the knowledge for how to produce the biogenic reef and where to put them. So it's a complementary between the research funding and also, yeah, environmental protection.
I think it's important that that we each bring something to this table in order to get where we are now. I don't think we would be where we are now with the projects.
Because they also have an ambition like us to restore nature.
You told me that you are not Danish, you are
no,
French.
Yeah.
You find Denmark or this culture of working as an example of innovative culture of working?
I think in Denmark you have such a good administrative support that you can really quickly innovate and develop things. So it makes it easier for scientists or innovation and develop new technology. I think the resources are really good.
Zaufanie społeczne sprzyja współpracy między firmami, uczelniami i rządem, a to z kolei przyspiesza transfer technologii. I w tym kontekście nie dziwi, że Dania ma jeden z najlepszych ekosystemów dla startupów w Europie, z Kopenhagą jako kluczowym hubem, w którym znajduje się ponad 500 startupów. Wskaźnik łatwości prowadzenia biznesu, Doing Business Index, plasuje Danię na czwartym miejscu na świecie. Pewnie ogromny wpływ mają na to programy zapewniające finansowanie dla młodych firm technologicznych, prosty system podatkowy i szybkie procedury rejestracji firm. To rozwiązanie, o których mówię, one pojawiły się w Danii dopiero jakieś 2-3 dekady temu. Podróż przez Danię, dzień numer 3. I przyjeżdżałem przez jeden z bardziej takich spektakularnych mostów. Dania jest położona na ponad 400, czy na około 400 wyspach, ale tylko 70 z nich to wyspy, na których ktoś mieszka. Wiele z nich jest połączonych naprawdę spektakularnymi mostami. No i właśnie przejeżdżamy jednym z takich mostów. Where are we? What is going on here?
We are at the main line at our facility here in Østbirk, where we actually do the assembly of the windows. So this is where we put all the components together to make what is known as the Veluproof window.
Tell me, the fact that we are in Denmark, it plays any role or is just an accident or coincidence?
It plays an important role because this was where it all started. Østbirk was the first factory in Velux where we actually started to industrialize the process of making roof windows. So it's not a coincidence. It's a deliberate choice to be here in Østbirk. In the old days, this was very close to the railroad out here, so we actually could get the windows shipped by train and we could get the components to the production by train as well. So the place is a very deliberate choice.
Your inventor was also inventor of many, many other equipment or things. Tell me, what plays the most important role in this Danish innovation culture? Education or tax policy or what exactly?
I think personally for Velux, it all basically comes down to that our founder was, as you say, very experimental. And we always have had a saying in Velux that one experiment is better than 1,000 experts giving their opinion. So if we have an idea, we go out and test it. And that we have built on, at least in Velux, for more than 80 years now. So it's been the culture that if we have a good idea, there's no need just to sit and talk about it. Let's go in production, let's test it. And if it works, then let's build upon it.
Will you show me what is going on here, step by step?
Yes.
Okay.
No problem.
So let's go.
Here we actually have one of our newest inventions. It's a robot that checks for quality. Because we use quite a lot of screws, it's very important that we ensure that all the screws are where they should be. Because if a screw is missing on the pivot hinge that actually holds the window, that could lead into a failure. And it's a failure we don't want. So it takes pictures of all the important screws and gaskets to see, are they where they should be? And that's a relatively low one.
So in recent years, probably it was a person.
It was a person, yes.
Ten robot, czy to ramię robotyczne, wygląda identycznie jak to, które widzieliśmy w Universal Robots. I tak ta historia się łączy. Jedna innowacja się skleja z drugą i dzięki temu pracują na siebie, w tym sensie, że no właśnie, 2 plus 2 wtedy nie wychodzi 4, tylko na przykład 6, gdy różne innowacje skleimy w jedno miejsce.
Always ahead doing something, trying to improve his products. So if you look at these, they're called dew channels. So water would actually get out on the right side, on the roof, and not inside. So that was actually pretty smart. Now it's much easier to clean the outside because you can turn it around. In Denmark, we have a lot of businesses run by families and foundations like our business, and that has stimulated the growth in Denmark as well.
Danny, what is so complicated or so different in the roof window when you compare it to the facade window?
We really need to make sure that it's waterproof because it is in the roof. So if it's not tight, water will go in and that will not be very
and
good
for the destroy the window.
Yeah.
Okay.
And here's the test house. This is one of the largest wind tunnels in Scandinavia, Northern Europe. And so far as we know, it's the only one used for testing roof windows. Yeah.
Okay. And, can you show us how it works?
Yeah, we will go in and start the tunnel. So if you just come along this way to the control room.
Mogłoby się wydawać, że ten wentylator, nawet duży, jest gdzieś z przodu, a w rzeczywistości on nie jest z przodu, tylko on jest gdzieś tam z boku. Tutaj jest to okno, tutaj są takie reflektory, nie wiem jak to nazwać, w razie zawdzijające, zakręcające wiatr. Natomiast wentylatory są w tym miejscu i obieg zamknięty. Zresztą zaraz tam wejdziemy, to zobaczycie.
Dobrze, że nie mam głosu.
Tutaj w tym tunelu można ustawić takie warunki. Mam tutaj na myśli i prędkość wiatru, i ilość deszczu, jakie występują średnio w Europie co 20 lat. Znaczy raz na 20 lat występują warunki, które tutaj można testować. O, tak. Podsumowując. Innowacyjność Danii wynika z połączenia wysokich nakładów na badania i rozwój, unikalnego modelu rynku pracy, strategicznych inwestycji w zieloną energię, kultury pracy i wsparcia przedsiębiorczości. Brzmi prosto? Pewnie proste nie jest, ale jak widać jest skuteczne. W Danii prawdziwy skok innowacyjności nastąpił w ostatnich 3, może 4 dekadach dzięki świadomej polityce gospodarczej, ale polityce oglądającej się na globalne trendy.